Welcome to Classic 4x4, the podcast for and by enthusiasts, collectors, and restorers of classic four-wheel drives. I'm your host, Chris Piccone, and you can follow the podcast on Instagram at Classic4x4Podcast, and you can follow my trials, tribulations of collecting and restoring classic four-wheel drives on Overland by the Sea. Today's episode is a very special episode. There's several different milestones for today's episode. The first is that it is our year-end 2022 classic truck and 4x4 market review. This, by far, is the topic that has been most requested by all of our listeners. The other big milestone is this is our 15th episode in our first season of Classic 4x4. I want to take this time to thank every one of our listeners, every one of our followers, and every one of our guests for supporting the Classic 4x4 podcast. I never in a million years would have thought in 2.5, you know, almost 3 months that the Classic 4x4 podcast would have grown to where it's at today. And I'm super excited to go on this venture with every one of you. The fact that there are thousands and thousands of people that download and listen to our podcast every single day is absolutely enamoring. And none of this exists without every one of you. So thank you. Thank you all. And then most important milestone is this is the end of our first season. So we are wrapping up our first season here at the Classic 4x4 podcast. And our second season is going to launch in early March. So I'm going to take the next 2 months, January and also February, and take that time to really elevate the podcast and bring it to the next level, not only with content, great interviews, but also branding and marketing. I feel personally responsible for making sure that I elevate the podcast and most importantly the listener experience, because again, without everyone out there, we don't exist. So back to today's very special year-end episode, the 2022 Classic Truck and 4x4 Market Review. We have the folks from Classic.com and 4B Exchange with us. So today we have Juan Calle, founder and CEO of Classic.com, and Max Monahan, head of business development and one of the truck specialists at Classic.com. Juan and Max, thank you guys for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Chris. Appreciate it.
That for those of you that aren't familiar with Classic.com, they are the preeminent aggregator of transparent classic car and truck market values and price comparisons that really empower buyers and sellers and enthusiasts to make informed buying and selling decisions in the market. So if you are ever looking to know what your classic car or truck is worth, if you're looking to know what past comps have sold for out in the market or what's available out in the market, that is the first place to go is Classic.com. If you haven't visited them online, check them out at Classic.com. Also follow them on Instagram and their other social channels at Classic. Which is spelled DOT.com. I spend hours and hours a day on Classic.com, you know, looking at different values and understanding market trends. It is the only place to go for classic car and truck data and analytics. Also, we have with us today the two of the co-founders from 4B Exchange, Brian Ellis and Garrett Ohm. Brian, hey, and Garrett, Chris, thanks for joining us.
Oh, glad to be here.
So for those of you that aren't familiar with 4B Exchange, they are the premier truck and 4x4 marketplace featuring rare, custom, and classic trucks and four-wheel drives. And if you are out in the market looking to either buy or sell or just look at some really awesome trucks, the only place to go is 4B Exchange. If you don't follow them on their social channels, follow them at 4B Exchange. And also check them out at line at 4BExchange.com. So the reason that I had both of these guests here today, both the crew from Classic.com and 4B Exchange, is, you know, throughout my professional career, I've really seen there are two key ingredients to any successful venture. And those key ingredients are passion and need. When you look at Classic.com, Juan and his brother actually founded, before founding Classic.com, they actually founded the FJ Company, which is one of the premier import and restoration shops for Toyota FJs, classic Toyota FJs. And throughout that experience and that passion for FJs, they quickly realized that there was a need for transparent market data and analytics. So as they were going through their course of business on a daily basis, They were constantly searching for comps and values and ways to really track the market. And they realized there was some stuff out there. It wasn't, you know, it was based, the data was based on very thinly traded data, and it was predominantly derived by algorithms, not actual true market comparisons. So they solved that problem, and hence Classic.com was founded. And the same goes for Forbi Exchange. You have, you know, three friends with complementary skills that had a shared passion for trucks and four-wheel drives. And in their trials and tribulations of buying and selling trucks and four-wheel drives, they quickly realized that there was no dedicated marketplace for, you know, not only classic, but unique and also rare and custom trucks and four-wheel drives. And hence, Forbi Exchange was founded as the premier truck and four-wheel drive marketplace. So that's my my long-winded intro for you guys, but I think it sets the background for today's conversation. So I'm going to start off with Juan. Juan, you know, tell me about yourself, both personally and professionally. You've been a very successful entrepreneur that's done some really cool stuff. And, you know, tell us not only where you live, where you're based, but most importantly, how you ended up, you know, through that passion launching Classic.com.
Chris, your intro was better than I could have ever put it. Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Nah, no problem.
So, yeah, so I'm based in Miami. I was born in Colombia, but basically grew up in Miami, moved over when I was 12 years old, went to school for engineering at the University of Miami, and during school, I started my first company, which was a search engine for Latin America. Built that out, and more around 2004, we sold that business to Yahoo, and that gave me a start in technology overall. After that, we started a few other companies. One of them was also the .co domain. So just like there's .com, .net, .org, we launched .co to compete globally against .com and .net and so on. Did well with that, sold that as well. But my real, you know, my true passion is in cars. We've been around cars my whole life. Grew up riding around in the back of my grandfather's FJ. And so my brother and I joined forces to start a company called the FJ Company, which you referenced earlier. And what we do there is essentially we take an old, you know, 1980s, 1970s Land Cruiser, and we modernize it into today's standards. My personal vehicle is right there in my background. That's my FJ 43, which I use just about on a daily basis to take my kids to school. But you know, in building that company and considering my background with technology, we quickly kind of realized there were some big gaps in the market in the market for classic and exotic cars. Primarily, the ability to discover cars in aggregate, being able to quickly type in a certain make and model and see what's available out there. So that's what we call discovery. And associated to that, seeing the pricing for classic and exotic cars. So we kind of saw those two things and sort of had an aha moment of, wait, why doesn't something like Zillow exist? I mean, that is what Zillow does for the real estate market. And so that was essentially the start of the company. We built classic.com to solve those two problems. The problem of discovery, being able to discover across the globe, any make or model that you're interested in, and also see the price associated to those makes and models in aggregate. We've done pretty well so far. We're about 3 years into the company. Just last month, we reached a little over a million visits on the website. So very excited about that.
Awesome.
That's very impressive. So Max, tell us about yourself. I know you're a native Idahoan, right? Idahoan, which is like the epicenter of trucks, right? So tell us about yourself, both personally and professionally, and how you ended up at Classic.com.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I'll try and keep it really brief, but I grew up on the, sitting on my dad's laps during his bullnose, Eddie Bauer Bronco, and I've just been obsessed with cars ever since. Of course, Porsche's little red 356 has always got my attention at car shows as a kid. So I'm a total Porsche person as well. But I can't deny, you know, my experience with Ford trucks and whatnot. And then professionally, I just found myself in from working in the local neighborhood dealership at age 14, all the way up spending time as a salesman, internet marketer, et cetera, business owner of really kind of bespoke, interesting enthusiast vehicles, and most recently a consignment store in Salt Lake. And that's where I started using classic.com, was when people would come in and want to pull comps for their vehicles. And, you know, I'd have to set up proper sales strategies for their vehicles. And classic.com just aggregated everything into one place. And it was such an amazing tool. And I just wanted to be involved in it. So I exited and the retail dealership world. And I've been back here in Idaho playing with classic trucks. Ford's really my jam, but I just sold my 88 Suburban that I just did a little light restoration on. You know, the word's already out there, so this is no news. But Idaho, you know, we don't really get any rust up here. So yeah, we are in the epicenter of 4x4 farm trucks. And I've done restorations on many cool Ford 4x4s. And 4x4s are really my jam. Here I am helping out classic.com, and I'm excited to hang out with you guys.
Thank you so much for joining us, both of you. And let's move on to the 4B Exchange guys. So Brian, how did this trifecta, though we only have two of the three founders on today, how did this trifecta come together, and what's your background, both personally and professionally?
Yeah, I think Max's story is a little bit of copy and paste from my own. I think, you know, grew up in an automotive family. My dad was a big British car collector, specifically in MGs. So very, not quite four-wheel drives, but very interesting nonetheless. But then went the dealership route as well. So I was handling inventory right in high school. There's no better job for a high school kid than running around basically on watch, just running through different kind of cars. So got a little taste of everything, which was a lot of fun. During college, I met Joel, who's our other co-founder. That was at a time when internet marketing was just figuring itself out, right? You had an emergence of social media. You had a lot of websites coming online, and really trying to figure out how to do that sort of thing for small businesses, right? This was before Squarespace or Wix or any of these kind of more modular sites that were able to kind of empower small businesses. And that was really our bread and butter. So Joel and I bonded that way. And then after college, I hooked up with Garrett, working at an advertising agency. We stayed connected through the years. And then last year, or a year and a half ago or so, we were in Maine. The three of us, we took a trip up and we just kind of sat there and brainstormed this concept of 4B Exchange, right? This marketplace of connecting buyers and sellers and really being able to do what I think some other marketplaces are challenged with, which is being able to go very deep and providing a smarter network for individuals who want to go deeper on those classified or those listings that are more rare or more unique or more modified, and being able to really be able to tell that story. Whereas there's a lot of limitations on current marketplaces not being able to do that. So that was sort of the genesis and how I got hooked up with Garrett and Joel there.
Excellent. That's a great story. So, Garrett, how about you, man? You were one of the players that completes this trifecta of the three founders. Tell us about yourself and parlay on what Brian said.
And shout out to Joel, our other partner. He's a great guy. Leads the tech for our company. Brian, Joel, and I have been, we've talked, I think, every single day for probably the last dozen years. And so we're very close. We talk about our passions, and automotive is definitely our passion. I think, obviously, we've gotten more and more into trucks and 4x4s over the years, and have shared the passion for that. And I think we saw a market gap too, you know, for this segment. And it's obviously a very popular segment as well. My passion for this starts at a young age too, that, you know, as I was coming of age, my dad always had trucks, and, you know, we bonded over that. My grandfather as well, had a lot of old Fords. And so I was around them a lot, even here in Maryland. You know, it's not the hugest market ever. It's not Idaho, but it's pretty solid. And just growing up around those, my dad had an old Bronco too, that is, you know, kind of in a lot of ways, a little quirky little truck. And I fell in love with that thing, and it was just so beautiful, and it was silver and blue. And I think that's when I caught the bug. In college, worked at a Porsche Audi dealership. That was the most fun job. I was just a service porter, but, you know, I got to drive a lot of the Porsches, and I fell in love with those. So Max, you and I have a lot in common there. You know, they would give me a car to go down 83, Interstate 83 here, to just test drive and make sure that it, you know, the issue was fixed. And it was just such a great job. But yeah, I mean, that's my background. I think, I'm in between 4x4s right now. I've got my eye on a 97 Pajero, or Pajero, however you want to pronounce it. I think people sort of interchange that, based on their interpretation, but love those small JDM trucks.
Super SUVs cool.
that are getting more and more popular.
That's awesome. Now that we've gotten to know everybody, let's get into the nitty gritty, which is why we're all here today, and talk about where the classic truck and 4x4 market has gone, but also where we all think it's gonna go. Right. So I'm going to start out with Juan. You have built, the largest aggregator of true market data out there for not just classic trucks, but also classic cars. So tell us about, on a very macro high level, including trucks and cars, what are some of the market highlights over the past, 1, 3, 5 years? And then we'll go into some of the subcategories.
Sure. Absolutely. So Chris, we track through classic.com, we track data from over 200 sources. So that's, that includes the top online auctions out there to the physical auctions as well. And more recently, we've started to gather data from dealers across the country and across the world. So about 200 plus sources in total. And that gives us a pretty clear idea of what's happening in the market on pretty much on a real-time basis in terms of availability of listings and also the pricing associated to these listings. Pricing for sale prices, ask prices, but more importantly, the sold prices, particularly from auction houses. We don't see entirely into the dealer sold data, but through DMV records, we can actually visualize some of the after sale price fluctuations as well. We aggregate all that and can obviously consolidate and see a big number for what the market is worth. So big picture, and here I'm referring to the overall market as a whole. The classic and exotic car market is about $40 billion of transactions per year. That's the gross value of the classic and exotic car market. Specifically, the auction market, and when I say the auction market, I'm talking about online venues and offline venues, that's about $4 billion in transactions in the last 12 months. So for 2022, we've tracked about $4 billion worth of transactions. So it's a very big market. Now, obviously, we all know that it's been on a tear in the last, 24 months. The market has just blown up, largely driven by online venues specifically. And there I'm obviously referring to the impact that companies like Bring a Trailer have had, Classic.com, 4B Exchange. I mean, these are all contributors to the growth of the market. And that growth, I think, is driven primarily by the transparency that these online venues have brought onto the market. Now, the offline venues, or what were traditionally the offline venues, are catching up too. And they're bringing some of these tools to, and putting them in front of our users and bringing that additional transparency. As has happened across other industries, when you bring transparency to markets, it attracts more buyers and more sellers. It's simple as that. And I think even, you know, old school, what we call old school dealers are getting on board with this idea, and they're starting to share more data with us, you know, little by little. It's a little bit like pulling teeth, or it feels like pulling teeth sometimes, but it's getting better in that regard. So to put things into contrast in terms of how the market has grown, and just referring specifically to the auction market, the $4 billion that we've seen in 2022, that relates to about $1.8 billion that we saw in 2019. Mm-hmm. So more than 100% growth in that period, a lot of it driven by obviously the impact that we saw from COVID and online venues starting to be a significant driver in the market. I will say though that in 2022, we're starting to see some softness appear in the market. Although there's been an explosion of listings and the overall market is larger, we're starting to see sell-through rate drop in a considerable way. To give you some context, we're coming from sell-through rates in, you know, the last, let's say, 2-3 years ago in the high 70s, low 80% of sell-through rate. Today, we're starting to see sell-through rates in the low 60s, particularly in online venues. Offline venues still have a bit of a higher sell-through rate, but overall blended, we're looking at a sell-through rate of 69%, 68%. Why is the sell-through rate dropping? We're coming from a seller's market, and now we're starting to shift into a buyer's market. That's largely driven by, you know, higher interest rates, you know, the economy, people getting a little bit concerned about what's going to happen in 2023. But again, it's still a much larger market than it was in 2019.
Excellent. Love to hear those amazing growth numbers. And, you know, what goes up must come down. And eventually things are going to soften. But hey, you never know, you know, where what the... We all have a crystal ball, right? We don't know which one's right. But nice. Hindsight's always 20/20. Now, I'm going to follow that up real quick, Juan, with what are some of the segments that not only over the past several years you've really seen come into their own and seen a mass amount of growth, but you know, fast forward to today, what are some of the segments that you're starting to see soften up the most?
So the segment that we've seen the most growth from are any vehicles in the 80s and early 90s. That segment there has just exploded. And I think that has to do with a little bit of the impact there is from a generational shift, right? People in their 30s, 40s, and early 50s starting to come into disposable income, wanting a second car, or simply wanting to do something during the weekend, right? Because of, you know, COVID, they can travel and so on and so forth. So those cars start to become very appealing. And so we've seen a lot of growth there. Particularly, you know, in the truck market, I probably should have mentioned this before, of that $4 billion in the market, of the auction market, about 7% of that is classic trucks. So that in 2022, that's about $268 million. And again, that's part of that explosive growth that we've seen in the market in the last couple of years. Actually, Max can speak much better about that because he's our market specialist for trucks at classic.com.
And yeah, that's thanks, Juan. Where I was going to go next. Max, tell us about the truck market, where you've seen that go, and you know, especially some of the trends and the sub-segments within the truck market versus, you know, domestic, import, you know, two-wheel drive, four-wheel drive. Talk to us about some of those.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to do so. So first off, I should probably say when we look at these results that we're seeing from this past 2020 year, or there's still a little bit left of 2022 here. So these markets could shift a little bit from what we're seeing. So I'm going to try and be as specific as possible, but you can also view all of this on our blog post on classic.com that we're going to be releasing. Also, we're looking at trucks and 4x4s or trucks and SUVs. Those could include some two-wheel drive trucks as well. And we're really looking at vehicles that are classics. So anything that's roughly sub 2000, the year 2000. But big picture, you know, it's kind of validating because I think we all kind of have a gut instinct of what's going on if you're active as an enthusiast or even as a professional working in the truck and SUV market. You kind of have a little bit of a grip of where things are. And then you can really double check that, you know, thanks to the transparency that classic.com offers. And what specifically we've been seeing is vehicles that have good utility, that are also maybe upgraded or a little more family friendly. So, you know, for example, right now, our first, you know, the number one top market in 2022 was a Land Rover Defender 110 wagon. So 110 being the 4x4 with potential to have, you know, even a third row style of seats in the back. And what's really driving those two is the kind of the resto mod world. So we talk about family friendliness. Hey, I'm going to drop $250,000 on a vehicle. Significant other, it better have, you know, V8 power to keep up with other vehicles on the highway, maybe ABS, definitely air conditioning, room for the golden retriever in the back, and also for the kids in the middle seat, right? So we're really seeing utility vehicles lead the market. Another fun thing that is also across pretty much all different vehicles, vehicle markets, but also in the 4x4 market too, we see something like our number two result being, you know, the Mitsubishi Pajero. I'm also with you, Garrett. I've always called it a Pajero, but what do I know? I'm from Idaho, so, you know, we got a little redneck accent with the Pajero.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, that speaks to the 25-year rule, in my opinion. There's always a bit of forbidden fruit that I think people desire or lust after. So it's vehicles that, you know, oh my gosh, you know, we saw those things ripping around at the Paris Dakar. And now we can finally have our own little Paris Dakar vehicle in our garage. And they're just so darn cool. They're also a little bit modern too, right? So you're going to have ABS. You're going to have an enclosed vehicle where, you know, the heater is probably going to work and enough power to get you down the street. And then speaking of power as well, what we see in our kind of third category of vehicles that have been trending up are sport vehicles. So sport trucks or sport SUVs, vehicles like GMC Typhoons, GMC Sonomas. I think there's rarity there. There's definitely performance, but there's also a bit of a market attraction too. You know, I know this is dedicated specifically for, you know, SUVs and trucks, but look at what happened with the Buick GNX, you know, that went crazy as well. So people, once they get priced out of those, may want to look to something from the same era and also have some sportiness, but those vehicles also offer a back seat that you can put a car seat in, right? So there's these three categories kind of go across all of those, utility, 25-year rule, and also performance.
That's a great overview of the truck subcategory market. That is absolutely excellent. You brought up, you know, three vehicles: the Defender 110, the Mitsubishi Pajero, whatever we're gonna call it, right? And the Typhoon. You know, when we set the Mitsubishi and the Typhoons kind of aside, I mean, which is even more insane because I remember 1997, 25 years ago, and the fact that these cars, when I was in high school, are actually now classics is even more mind-blowing. Those are, you know, a lot of those cars are, you know, the Typhoons have been here. You know, they're starting to have a trend, but the Pajeros have not been here. So they're just starting to come into the market because of that 25-year rule. So we haven't seen the market flooded. But the number one player this past year has been the Defender 110 wagon, right? We've seen a lot of growth there, and we all know what goes around comes around. What goes up does eventually come down. Are we starting to see those Defender 110s soften a little bit?
So what's nice about classic.com is we build out many different markets, and there are so many different variants, right, of specific vehicles. So that's what's fun about being a car enthusiast. You get to learn something new every day, right? And on classic.com, if you're not familiar with, a Land Rover Defender, right? There's so many different variants out there. So specifically in the Land Rover 110 market, what's driving those are definitely Restomod Customs. So vehicles that have had engine swaps and comfort convenience features added to them. Or also there's a little bit of unobtainium there in desire because vehicles like the North American spec Defender 110, which was very limited production, that's always been an expensive vehicle. And they're very highly sought after. So that market's always been a little bit elevated. And then also you have now the fact that they can be brought into the United States thanks to the 25-year rule. But you know, they're definitely going to need a little bit of work because they're quite utility vehicles. But compared to other Defender markets, if we were to look at, let's say, a soft top a Defender 90, D90 from, let's say, the 80s, and let's say that's relatively like a base model vehicle, those don't seem to be nearly as significant as something like a 110 wagon. For example, the 110 wagon, you know, they've seen almost an increase, and this can all be found on classic.com on our blog for this, for specifically what we're speaking to, where, you know, the market value, the combined market value was about $32,000 back in December. And now we've seen it sitting around $61,000. So quite a significant bump, hence why it's, you know, the number one vehicle. But there's a lot of different factors in there that are driving those up.
Excellent. And I would be doing the listeners a disservice if we didn't talk about the FJ market, given that Juan, you know, is a expert in this space. Can you talk to us about the FJ, the Toyota FJ market, real quick?
Sure. Yeah, the FJ market has been super interesting. So overall, let's keep in mind the FJ market is the parent market, or sort of the model family that it belongs to is the Land Cruiser. And in the Land Cruiser, you've got the FZJ80, the FJ80, the FJ43, the FJ40s, and so on. So there are many model variants within the Land Cruiser market that we have to consider. But overall, the market for Land Cruisers had this huge run up in value. We saw the FZJ80, for example, I think being one of the top markets for 2021, if I'm not mistaken, maybe also 2020, up there with in terms of performance, you know, from a value perspective during those 2 years. This year, they've started to plateau. In 2022, they're nowhere near the top of the market rankings. And I think that has to do simply with they grew so fast in value. They went up so fast in value that they've already reached the ceiling, so to speak. But specifically the FJ40s, which I'm, you know, they're dear to me, and FJ43s as well. There, what we're seeing is this flood of cars, imported vehicles, and quite frankly, having many of questionable quality and so on. That's given the overall market a little bit of a bad rap, quite frankly, and just the sheer number of vehicles that are available for sale, which again you can see that on Classic, you can see the number of vehicles that are out there for sale. That obviously starts impacting prices as well, specifically for the FJ40 and FJ43s. That's not the case with the FZJ80. But again, those went up in value already and they've sort of plateaued.
Excellent. Yeah. Now within the, I guess the overall, you know, truck and 4x4 market, you know, we talked about, you know, the D110, the FJs, are there any other, you know, sleepers in there right now that you guys think are undervalued, any type of makes, models that people aren't looking at where, you know, that haven't really run up yet?
I might chime in really quick, Juan. I'm going off script here as if we were scripted, but as I run through this list that will be published on our blog post, we really wanted to keep it just kind of to the top 10. And within the top 10 markets, remember, we're looking at things like an international harvester, you know, the travel all fourth gen. That's number five.
Nice.
But one that where I like to exist in, just from my budget, these days, you know, I'm not playing with Porsche 959s anymore. I'm not, you know, in the 356 world. I'm really comfortable in the sub $15,000 range. So what I'm seeing here as number seven is the GMC Yukon, and that's the second gen Yukon. That in December was, you know, an $11,500 vehicle, and now we've seen some results that are pushed those up to the $16,000 mark. So, you know, when we talk about sleepers, you know, maybe that's something that's interesting. And of course, these rankings could change because we're not to the end of the year yet. So I must disclaimer there. But I really like looking at that range. Also, the third gen Pajero, you know, is number eight, right behind the Suburban. So this list is full of surprises. And as much as I want to say, oh yeah, you know, bump side Ford F series is the number one market, right? That's not the case.
So you hear, you heard it here first. Start loading up on second gen Yukons because that's the next market. too funny. That's awesome. That's some great information. So we're gonna switch gears real quick and move over to the 4B Exchange guys. So you guys are a marketplace dedicated to trucks and 4x4s. So Brian, I want to talk with you real quick. Give us an overview of marketplaces. There has been a massive shift from, you know, what I call in-person auctions to digital auctions. And the market share and, you know, the overall market has grown, but the market share that is of these transactions that are happening in a digital marketplace versus a in-person marketplace are completely different. Can you talk to us about the overall market of the marketplaces themselves?
Yeah, I mean, there's been so much change, as Juan and Max were alluding to. There's so much change, and we're at an inflection point for marketplaces right now, I truly believe, especially within that truck and 4x4 niche, which, in my opinion, has been underserved for so long. You know, Max brought up that really cool example of the GMC Yukon. It's fascinating because that's a great example of where increased transparency is needed, right? You see those increased values, and it's not just the GMC Yukon, it's two-door versus four-door, it's the GTs, it's all these different kind of, you know, sub-markets, so to speak, within the market that make it so interesting and fascinating to buyers and users. In addition to that, you know, you really just need a depth of information, and you don't get a depth of information without a solid network. And that's why we've always relied on somebody like classic.com, who has such a depth of information. If you only have sales data for one or two examples, you know, I'm going to look somewhere else, but somebody like classic.com has such a depth of information that makes that, you know, sort of use case so critical. Buyers and sellers are, as Max was alluding to, they just are demanding transparency, and they need more information. They need to know, especially with such a influx of sellers coming into market, right? A buyer who is maybe entering the market for the first time needs to be very comfortable with who's on the other side of that transaction. So one of the key points that we like to look toward is, what is that trust factor, right? Who is that other side? Who is on the other side of that equation? Whether it's a small time restorer or, you know, a mega business behind it. So we really look and have seen such a gravitation toward that within the marketplace. Then the other side, as I mentioned, is really that transparency. And auctions have offered such a great amount of transparency for buyers and sellers. You have very enthusiastic communities behind them, right, who are helping reveal different pieces about the niche that might not have known, right? And having sold cars through auctions before too, it's very cool to see enthusiasts who help elevate those cars on your behalf, right? They point out such great features or benefits of, you know, whatever the make and model is, that brings other people along for that ride. So we've really seen the marketplace evolve, you know, again, towards transparency, toward specification of different types of trucks and 4x4s, and being able to convey that information accurately, as well as being able to tell stories of buyers and sellers and being able to connect on a more human level. So those have been some really fascinating, you know, you always have those network challenges, right? Making sure that there's enough utility for buyers and sellers, but seeing the other side of bringing in some of those tried and true e-commerce components of a marketplace, right? Price transparency, price shopping, you know, history and just the backgrounds of the buyers and sellers themselves, all of those pieces, moving that into the car buying experience has been a fascinating evolution for marketplaces that we've been able to witness.
Excellent. Now, looking at the overall marketplaces, both, you know, in person and digital, what trends have you seen there from market share over the past several years?
Yeah, I mean, look, people are buying more auctions, right? Then they're specifically buying digital auctions. That's a way to kind of harvest that transparency. So people want to understand what they're buying. They want to have some control over, you know, what their price is. And auctions really allow that. So we've seen, and the data definitely supports it, as Juan was alluding to, users are flocking over to auctions, whether that's traditional or digital. I mean, there's definitely a surplus in the digital space and a lot of new emergence of different players in there. We've seen really broad market ones, but there's really a demand for niche focused, right? So people who can tell or convey that story for why this truck, why this 4x4, they don't want to miss something or learn something new, especially in that truck and 4x4 market that, again, hasn't had as much of a predominant player in it, that this way they can allow themselves to learn more or explore more. You know, Juan was alluding to the differences of those Land Cruisers, right? People want to know that. People want to be able to find that. People want to be able to have that discovery moment and kind of own that discovery piece. So auctions have really allowed that. Again, the transparency in prices, the understanding of who's on the other side, and that discovery.
I would just add, Brian, that was incredible. I think I would just add that, you know, we're seeing a comfort level increase with buying a car sight unseen across the country. I think people are in a position where they want more choice than their local market can bring. And I think, you know, there's just a growing comfort level with being able to buy a car sight unseen. And you see some, you know, there's companies out there like Carvana and Vroom that, you know, that advertise on TV all the time, buy a car, you know, online. And I think that's helping marketplaces like us, you know, with attracting people that are okay with buying a car, either auction or classified as well, across the nation, across the country. And I think, you know, to Max's point, you know, buying a truck from a certain geographic region has its advantages when it comes to things like rust that plague classic cars. And so, you know, there's people that are in Maryland or in the Mid-Atlantic that are looking for, you know, for a truck out west that might be in a little bit better shape than they would see here with the salted roads and so forth. So
I think that's a good point too, Garrett, like that, that trust factor and that ability and that comfort with buying online from a kind of sight unseen in many cases has increased. And part of that has been just a stronger demand from some of these platforms in terms of content, right? You know, 10 low res images from a cell phone isn't going to work anymore. You know, that you want to see those angles, you want to see the imperfections, and you want some transparency and truth and what those flaws are.
The cold start videos.
You know, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Critical, you know, being able to, you know, look under the underbody of a 4Runner is critical. Yeah. You know, and I think people, you know, Brian touched on the community. People in the peanut gallery will tell you need to like check out the underside. You know, if there's certain areas in certain trucks that, you know, that are plagued by rust, that where rust accumulates. And I think those types of things are really important in terms of being transparent to Juan's point, you know, that buyers demand that nowadays.
Yeah. But in turn, you get more people into the marketplace that have had limitations in the past, right? If I'm not a dealer, my option is Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace, but not anymore. Now, if I can get a good photographer or if I can learn that skill set for myself, I have a chance of being a good seller on some of these platforms. So what's been really cool about it is it has brought more private sellers into the marketplace, or people who are doing, you know, three or four, Chris, almost like yourself, three or four a year, who are finding something pretty cool, restoring it and bringing it back onto market, which would have been very limiting in the past, or you might have been relegated to a specific region, whereas now you can pull people in from across the country. So that's the good benefit, is it's elevated or demanded that individuals or dealers are transparent about what they're selling, and given the opportunity for people to bring to market some cool stuff.
That's some absolutely excellent commentary on marketplaces. I want to ask Garrett real quick. I know you're very close with all the sellers on 4B Exchange. So you're starting to see some trends with classic 4x4s and trucks, whether, you know, you start to see resto mods come on the platform, or really tried and true original vehicles, or like what Max said, you know, having restored vehicles that have the comforts, some of the modern day comforts, you know, that are family friendly, or, you know, have HVAC or, you know, modern stereo. So what out there are you seeing the sellers bring to market, and what is selling through the quickest for some of the best numbers with the buyers?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, to your point, the resto mods, but we've seen a lot of resto mods that still preserve the original patina, and those seem to do really well. They're beautiful. I think, you know, nature is sometimes the best artist when it comes to classic trucks. And so you see a lot of those. There's also, you know, a lot of fully restored, you know, trucks. I think those are for the collector in a lot of cases because of the price. You know, those are going for pretty high, I think. We talked a little bit about sell-through rate, or Juan did, and I think part of the reason that the sell-through rate has gotten lower is because the market's gone up. People are setting higher reserve prices because they, you know, they expect, you know, the market to be strong, and sometimes it's not always that way. I was just looking at in prep for this, we track a lot of things on our platform. Was looking at some of the most popular things in terms of, you know, clicks, in terms of outbound clicks from our site. One seller, obviously the Expedition vehicles do really well. That's not really a classic 4x4 and truck, so I won't talk a whole lot about those, but I think people are looking for an escape. So converted vans and Expedition vehicles is very popular. Some of the most popular things on our platform. But outside of that, you know, we've seen, you know, I was looking at one yesterday for one of our sellers that has about 40 trucks. The most popular truck in terms of interest was a Bronco 2, which I talked a little bit about. So that made me really happy. You know, it's a quirky truck that you don't see a whole lot of. I think they had some, you know, had some rust issues, had some transmission issues. And so you don't see a ton of them, especially not in really good shape. And so this particular seller has one that's pretty nice, and it's gotten a lot of interest. I don't expect it to be on the market for very long. A lot of Ford Rangers and Max, I promise I'm not pandering. The Fords have been pretty popular. Ford Rangers from the 90s, pretty popular. Again, you don't see a ton of them that are in great shape. And so when you do, people generally jump on them. Ninth generation F-Series pickups, which are a passion of mine. I think the aero-nosed pickups are definitely, they're having their moment. If they haven't, they're getting there. I haven't looked at the breakdown on classic.com on those yet, but I imagine that they're still performing pretty well. And then the JDM, the Japanese even right-hand drive stuff is becoming more and more popular. We're seeing that the demand for those and the sell-through on those are the sell-through and the rate of selling on our classified product as well is pretty good. I think people are really digging those right now. Even things like Light Aces and Mazda Friendy Bongo Friendies, which is something that it's just, you know, no one knows it even exists over here. Not many people. So when you see one, you're like, wow, that's pretty cool. What is that thing? I think a lot of people really want those. What is that thing? Trucks right now.
That's pretty cool. I mean, and we're starting to see a lot of that come into the market, especially with the 25-year rule.
Exactly.
Which again is back to me is mind blowing that, you know, cars from the late 90s are now classics and they're 25.
I know, Chris. You and I have talked. You and I have talked. We're about the same age, so I'm also miffed to see that these cars and trucks that, you know, that were really popular as we were coming of age have now become classics. That's just so wild to me.
Hey, the Bronco 2 is what's wild to me. I mean, I've seen that out there. There's a couple in the marketplace that are going in the mid-teens where you're like, these are clean, low-mileage Bronco 2s. So I'm more wondering, like, who kept this clean, low-mileage Bronco 2 in a garage somewhere, right? So that's my number one question. But number two is, like, you know, who is on the other side of the transaction that's like, you know, I'm going to pay 16 grand for that thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. My dad traded his for a Tacoma. And he had a Tacoma for a long time. But I preferred the Bronco too. It was just, you just have to have a couple of spare transmissions, on hand just in case. They were super cheap to replace though. So, you know, no big deal.
That's you heard it first. Load up on Yukons, Bronco 2s, and Pajeros, right?
And by the way, the Yukons, you know, we come at it from less of a value standpoint than classic.com, but more demand and popularity. Those Yukons, they're so popular, so much engagement on those trucks on our platform. So,
those are two things I didn't expect to come out of this conversation today. Were Yukons and Bronco 2s, but I'm going to bring it back to Juan, you know, and our data gurus, Juan and Max. Do you guys have any data on the marketplaces, you know, without naming names or anything? Just, you know, we talked about there being $4 billion worth of transactions on auction platforms this past year. How does that break down between physical in-person auctions and digital auctions, and where has that trend been over the past couple of years?
Sure, yeah. So interestingly, and you will see this on the some of the graphs that we'll publish on the blog post. Of the 4 billion in transactions in 2022, about half of that, or maybe a little even more than half of that, is now taking place in online auctions. So explosive growth there, because back in 2019, the lion's share of transactions were still through physical auctions. I think though what's interesting about 2023 is we're starting to see that line blur, and we'll have a very difficult time distinguishing between online and offline. It's similar to what happened with, let's say, you know, at one extreme Amazon and the other extreme Walmart. You know, at some point Walmart started catching up and converting their business to being a hybrid between online and offline. And then the online player being Amazon starting to buy physical assets and operating from physical assets, just like Walmart, right? So I actually think the winning model longer term for auctions is a hybrid model, and we'll start to see some of that emerge more clearly in 2023. So this will be a difficult discussion next year. By the same token, I think there will be some consolidation in the for the large online auction players that are out there. There are too many. There's no need for so many different auction providers, but you'll start to see the emergence of specialists very, very clearly, because you know, these large auction players can take sort of a shotgun approach, but when it comes to really special vehicles, you need the specialists. And I actually think that's where companies like 4B Exchange will play a significant role next year.
That is very interesting how you are forecasting this reversion back to the mean, where, you know, you have physical auctions and online auctions, and you're going to start to see this reversion back to the mean, and have, like, you know, these omni-channel sales channels. Yeah. Where, you know, the consumer can start, you know, have both options or a hybrid of both options. Very interesting. So now talking about the crystal ball, right? You know, none of us have a crystal ball, but we have enough data behind us and enough experience in the market to know and have a decent idea of what the future lays out. So Juan, if you can give us a kind of a macro overview on the classic both car and truck market as a whole, you know, feel free to talk about, you know, if you have any other data on even cars, whether it's, you know, older 30s and 40s and 50s, or, you know, air-cooled Porsches, whatever you want to throw out there, and bring it back to trucks and 4x4s. What do you see happening in the future with the market and certain trends in the subcategories?
Yeah, so I think broadly speaking, we will see a slowdown in the growth of the market. That is for the obvious reasons. You know, higher interest rates are definitely starting to impact the market. We will continue to see growth from the online players, but like I said earlier, the offline players are catching up. We'll see that very clearly in 2023 as some of the offline players start to launch some of their initiatives. But overall, a softening of the market. So yes, prices can you know, sellers are still hoping for higher prices, and that's why we're seeing the lower sell through rates. But eventually, sellers will need to sell, so prices are going to start to come down. I wouldn't say that. That they're going to drop, but they're going to stabilize. We're long gone are the days in which we saw, you know, specific models of the Land Cruiser, for example, just on every sale that was like escalating. Those days are gone. We're going to start to see either no sales, no sell through, or we're going to start to see sell throughs, but at a flattening price. And I think that's going to happen across the entire market.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Max, while we have you here, you know, you are the classic.com truck specialist, but Fords are your, you live, eat, and breathe them. You know, we're starting to see a trend. You know, yes, the bump sides and the dent sides are still very popular, but we're starting to see a trend towards, you know, everything from, you know, yes, I'm going to say brick noses and OBSs, you know, back to, you know, the bull noses of 80 and 86, which again, these were, you know, like the Bronco 2, you know, some throwaway trucks a while back. And now, you know, there is a huge demand for them. So can you kind of give us a snapshot on the Ford truck market, what you've seen and what you foresee in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to chime in. So, you know, a lot of those vehicles, the values that are realized are based on condition. And what we can do is we can look back, because, you know, the last thing I want to do is throw a crystal ball out there and mislead or be wrong. But
no, please do. You got to make a call. Call out there.
What I can say is the Bronco 2 on our blog post for our report of 2022, the Bronco 2 is number 15 on the list. So it's up there, as is the Ranger. It's in the top 20. And these were vehicles, like you said, they were throwaway. But really we're seeing, you know, I think enthusiasm driven to is, number one, they're relatively affordable. You know, we're talking sub $20,000 vehicles in some cases. These are also vehicles you could find if you get lucky, you know, for what, sub $10,000, and it's a decent condition vehicle. There's a lot of stuff out there that isn't, and there's people that are trying to sell stuff that isn't, you know, but condition is very important. But what we can do is we can look back at what is historically happened. So if we look at for example, the first generation Bronco, where we have a lot of data. And what I wanted to do is look at what a Restomod custom versus a highly original vehicle, where the differences are and which one is more expensive and where the demand is, et cetera. And it's pretty darn interesting because I'm the type of person that doesn't need utility. You know, I've got a new F-150 I drive around for daily duties, but I want to get in an old Bronco and have that. Wow. You know, I really got to work to drive this thing. There's no texting and driving, et cetera. So I'm enthusiastically in the highly original category, and there's a lot of great opportunity there. And the reason why I say that is because everything is around, like you could get the nicest conditioned or highly original condition first generation Bronco for sub $100,000. Then you get into the Restomod world, right? Coyote swaps, modern conveniences, perfect paint, beautiful upholstered interiors. You know, the highest sale in 2022 was $335,000 for a wow. Restomod custom Bronco, right? So where do I see things like Bronco 2s? Are they going to be turned into Restomod customs and fetch $350,000 in the next 10 years or so? You know, that's not the crystal ball I'm going to throw out there. But if we look at past scenarios, like the Bronco, first generation Bronco, that's the difference between a highly original, you know, being $100,000 for the best one and the best Restomod custom being, you know, $335,000. So it's interesting to see because my enthusiasm lies in highly original, you know, and then other enthusiasts want, you know, a fully restored, modified custom or Restomod custom vehicle. So it'll be interesting to see where where the enthusiasts go.
Gotcha. Next question I'm going to ask you actually brought up a good point on how a lot of these makes and models have, you know, some variation in their sale prices. You know, you have, you know, sub 40,000 and then you have, you know, more than 100,000. So I'm going to throw it back to Juan real quick. Do you guys have any data or any commentary on the sell through within price brackets, like sub 40,000, subs, you know, 40 to 60, 60 to 80, 80 to 100 plus? Are you starting to see some trends or any data around that?
Yeah, absolutely. So very, very simply, at the very top of the market, that market is very healthy. So anything even above 100,000 is still very, very healthy. As you get into the 250, 500K range, even healthier. Where we're seeing the most softness today is in the 40,000 and under segment. And that's where we're seeing either the lowest sell-through rates and actually average prices starting to come down.
Interesting. That's very interesting. So I think we all together as a team should buy a Bronco 2, do a complete resto mod and sell it for $350,000. We will be successful there. Yeah. So back to the 4B Exchange guys, you know, you guys have a lot of those, you know, yeah, they're not really classics, but a lot of the expedition type vehicles, these purpose built overlanding vehicles that are on your platform. And these things are not cheap at all. You know, these things are, you know, several hundred thousand dollars. So Brian, can you talk to those and how you're starting to see the sell through and also the amount of volume you're starting to see within your marketplace, not only get posted, but also how they're selling too?
Yeah, I mean, that's such an interesting market, that top end market. And I think you look at somebody like an Earth Roamer who really paved the way to bring other people into that market. We've actually seen some other folks, aspirational builds that are in a similar vein, right? Taking a really beautiful platform like the F-550 and building out a really bespoke camping experience out of it. It's tough, right? I mean, you're talking about somebody who if they want to buy one of those new, you're talking about a 3-4 year waiting period, right? I mean, the production time is very long, and some of that was extended by difficulty to even obtain those cars, but then also just long build out periods and a high demand. So you saw a very prominent emergence of others who were providing absolutely gorgeous rigs in a similar vein. You see a really strong secondary market too. So, you know, you're seeing some of these earth roamers come back onto the market that have 20,000 miles on it, 2016, 2017 Ford built out, but 20,000 miles on it. And I'm sure that it was used properly and really, you know, you're not just going to grab some groceries and those things. But yeah, you really see a solid amount hitting the market in as a way of kind of working around some of those long extended wait times. So we do see the earth roamers at the higher end. Those guys have no problem moving their inventory, right, when they can build out something with one of their great floor plans. But then you also see an emergence of things like Sprinter van conversions, et cetera, but then some of the older builds too. There was we just posted a Mitsubishi Fuso with a A-frame on the back, and just absolutely really cool stuff that people were able to come to market with, pretty custom solutions. But so those have been really resilient. We've seen, again, not only those higher end builds that are being built brand new, customized for the buyer, but then subsequently just a very prominent emergence of a secondary market for whether it's a newer build or something that is a classic, right? Go extreme, go get one of those JDMs and see what you can do out of it. So it's been really cool to watch that transition. I think part of it is a byproduct of how consumers are thinking, which is really, really cool to see. And we highly encourage, right, just thinking outside of the box. But then again, just more awareness around this type of market, which has been great to see.
That's an interesting point to digest, how the, you know, the build times to buy one of those highly modified expedition and overlanding vehicles is that pipeline is so long that the secondary market stays alive and well because you have the guy that wants one,
yeah,
can afford one, but he doesn't want to wait 3 years. He wants it right now because, yeah, oh, by the way, he's taking a trip into the Sierras as soon as the snow melts. And that's in 4 months or 6 months. It's not in 3 years. So that is very, a very interesting point. You know, I would be doing our listeners a disservice if I didn't talk about Jeeps, right? So everybody knows that my collection, the core of it is classic Jeeps. Yes. You know, I've had, you know, FJs, you know, Land Cruisers, FJs, Scouts. I've had Land Rovers, but Jeeps have always been my thing. You know, Garrett, I want to flip it over to you. What are some of the trends that, especially with your sellers, that you're starting to see with some of the classic Jeeps?
Yeah, the classic Jeeps. I think the CJ8 Scrambler is without a doubt the hot Jeep right now. I feel like people are really really flocking to those, and when you find a good one, it gets snatched up pretty quickly, unless someone's asking a ridiculous amount of money, which often happens in this market. You know, their expectations for a value don't quite match the softening market, but you know, those I think are becoming increasingly popular. You know, outside of the classic realm, you know, there's a lot of the new Wranglers that you see out there. So I think those are popular in terms of quantity of them, and you know, they're attainable and people can get around the idea of daily driving them, whereas, you know, an older Jeep is a little bit less daily driver friendly, so to speak. I predict the Commando, you know, those types of things, the Jeep pickups, you know, the classic Jeep pickups, anything with a pickup bed, I think is going to be, is going to be big. I think even the Comanche, you know, you don't see those too often, but when you do, we just had a really nice J20 from one of our seller partners that that people loved. I think it's still for sale. I think the asking price is pretty high because it's pretty rare to see one, especially in good condition. But those types of things I think are really popular nowadays.
Well, even older and find yourself a forward control.
There
cool.
you go.
You know?
Yeah.
Those things are definitely wild.
Those are cool.
Yeah. But Garrett, I hope your crystal ball comes to fruition because I just picked up a very clean 65,000 mile 82 Jeep J10. So
it's beautiful.
Thank you. I hope
it's
that,
beautiful. The color
comes
is
to fruition.
The color and graphic scheme is incredible. Overland by the Sea. Check it out.
It's insanely clean too. Juan, Max, do you have any commentary on the Jeep market, what you're seeing, what people are liking, what they're not liking, any data points that you want to throw at us?
I won't dare talk about the Jeep market because all of my FJ fans would get upset.
I can help out. I'm a total Jeep nut too. My dad made sure my first vehicle was a ZJ. Grand Cherokee, and had a few of them. And I personally, like, just in the sport, we talk about sport SUVs earlier, like the Grand Cherokee 5.9. If a clean one comes across, like, I've got money for that thing right away, because that's something I could daily drive and probably, you know, take fly fishing if I wanted to. Not serious off-roading like my old one. But as we were talking about Jeeps, I just quickly referenced the blog post on what's, you know, our top 100 markets for 2022, and both the YJ Wrangler and the, let me double check. I think it was TJ. Let's see. Oh, ZJ right now is number 46. TJ's number 45, TJ Wrangler, and number 41 is the YJ.
Nice.
Wow. I love to see those 90s era, especially the YJs, the square headlights start to climb. I've noticed it myself out there in the market, especially with the YJ Saharas. If you can find a clean, low mileage YJ Sahara or Rio Grande model, those specialty models, wow, they're commanding some pretty, pretty big dollars. My overview of the Jeep market over the past, year and couple years and my, overall crystal ball on the classic Jeep market is, you know, we're starting to see the CJ5s, and even the CJ7s in that manner soften up a little bit. They built a ton of them. There's a ton of them out there. They're holding strong, but they are softening up more so the CJ5 than the CJ7. It's just a little bit, that shorter wheelbase is a little bit less desirable. Like Garrett said, the CJ8, the Scrambler, they made them from 81 to, you know, yes, technically 86, but they were really leftover 85s, right? So they had a 4 or 5 year run. They weren't popular back in the 80s, but man, are they popular right now. Mm-hmm. And the numbers just keep climbing. The days of a 20 or even a $30,000 CJ8 are over. They're climbing strong. But I was recently in the market for what Garrett said, a pickup, and you look at the Comanches, the MJs, and there aren't a lot out there. And the ones that are good and clean, they are going for some big numbers, along with the J10s and the J20s. So I'm starting to see that trend. You know, everybody thinks of a Jeep as this like multifaceted utilitarian vehicle. And, people like the first day I drove my J10 around, every single person I came across was like, hold on a second, Jeep made a pickup truck, right? So I'm starting to see that trend, but I like to see the YJs, the ZJs, and even the XJs, good, clean XJs are I'm starting to see trend up really well. And I do find it interesting, back to Max's point, with the family friendly versus, you know, utilitarian, we are starting to see the JTs and the JLs, the modern Wranglers, that are popular, but we're starting to see some of those custom builders, like our friends at Urban Jeep, that are building these absolutely immaculate and amazing modern, you know, JLs and JTs that you can drive on a day-to-day basis, but man, you can take them rock crawling and off-road. So you can pick the kids up at school and get them back and forth to soccer practice. But, you know, if you really need to and when you want to, and if you're a weekend warrior, you can conquer some absolutely serious terrain with them. So, guys, I definitely am so appreciative as we start to get into the end of the podcast of all your time. But I want to ask some fun questions while I have you all here. Let's round robin real quick. And we'll start on the bottom right of my screen. Everybody out there on the podcast can't see this, but we have Juan in the bottom right of my screen. Juan, what was your first car and what was your first, classic four-wheel drive or classic truck?
First car was a Volkswagen Corrado VR6.
Super cool. Love that, you know.
Which did not remain stocked very long. Uh-huh. It became a racer rather quickly. This was back in high school. And then my first 4x4, it's actually a cool story. My grandfather had two vehicles during his lifetime, and they were both FJ40s. The second one was a 1982 FJ40, which when he passed away, my brother and I restored. That's actually what started the FJ company. And that's the vehicle. I still have that vehicle. That was my first 4x4, and I still have it in my collection. So, yeah.
That's amazing. Very cool. Max, when we move on to you, what was your first car in general, and what was your first classic 4x4 truck, whatever you want to call it?
Sure. First 4x4 was my dad and I split. He helped me out. Split a 95 ZJ, and that was the inline six Grand Cherokee. And it was baby blue, so it wasn't that cool for a high schooler, right? So, and then my excuse was, well, we lifted it and put, you know, 33s on it, and now it's super slow. So I've got to buy a 98 V8 and swap everything over to it. that was silver on black, one of the limited edition versions. So that was a lot cooler. And then I guess my favorite 4x4, man, there's so many, but I pulled out of Portland a yellow 4x4 high boy, and all original high boy, you know, had the original selling dealer's paperwork on it. And I think that was used by a logging company, but I cherish that thing, all original patina. Anyways, that was the coolest 4x4 I've owned.
It's great.
Excellent. Brian, how about you, man?
Yeah, I think the first car that I drove in high school, I shared a Saturn SL2 with my sisters. If I recall correctly, the driver's side door didn't work at one point. So
it was plastic, so it was easy to replace.
Yeah, exactly. I had one of those too, Brian. So. Yeah. Awesome.
First 4x4 Jeep YJ, had it in college for a minute. I went through this rotation in college where I just blasted through a bunch of cars really quickly. And that was one. I think I used that one well. That's for sure.
That's cool. How about you, Garrett?
Yeah, first car was a red 1991 Volkswagen Jetta. It was an absolute piece. It broke all the time. It was an automatic. So that, yeah, it was a piece. I would love to have another one, though. It's cool looking. You don't see them. Like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. But first 4x4 was, I know the Bronco 2 has been the star of the show here, but my dad gave me the Bronco 2 to drive after when he bought the Tacoma. So that was my first.
Nice.
Yep.
That is that's cool. I'll, you know, as we start to get to the end here and we exit, I want to know what the future holds for classic.com. So Juan, without, you know, giving away any of your special sauce, what do you guys have coming up at classic.com? What are some initiatives you're working on, and what are some of the cool things you're doing for your users?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll share a little bit of that, Chris. So the number one question we get from users is what's my car worth? As you can imagine. And, you know, our website is good at presenting kind of data in aggregate. But if you manipulate it the right way, you can actually start getting a good sense of what your car may be worth. So we're going to formalize that into a product called Garage, So you will be able to start adding your cars into this garage and get a sense for its value by comparing it to all the other data points that are out there, as recent as today, right? So it'll update real time and so on. Very, very cool product that's coming online soon. And the other aspect of this, which plays into some of how the market is evolving, is sellers are starting to, in the process of selling a car, starting to become far more professionalized than it was before. I think the Forbes guys alluded to this, but long gone are the days of quick pictures with your iPhone and a one sentence description and call me for more information. Those days are long gone. But so actually selling a car online becomes very, very difficult for people that are not professional in the industry. So we are launching a service which we're testing now to help sellers through the process of selling their vehicles online and offline. It's an omni-channel sort of a approach. And given that we have a lot of data where vehicles are selling well, we can facilitate that process for sellers. So those are the two things we're working on. One is the garage product and also giving sellers a service to help them sell their car more effectively.
That's very interesting. I love to hear platforms like yourselves becoming multifaceted and giving back and providing better services to the users. So how about you, Brian? What does 4B Exchange, you guys have grown an immense amount in the past since founding this thing 13, 14 months ago. And, the amount of inventory and classified listings you guys have on the platform, along with your user engagement, the massive amount of followers you have on your social channels and what's hitting your website on a daily basis. What's the future hold for 4B Exchange?
Yeah, I mean, we're obsessed with answering that question of how we become a more valuable marketplace, right? And that's really driven by a couple different things, or it's going to drive some innovation over the next couple of months, right? One of those is integrations, right? How do we better provide information like, what's my car worth, right? Juan will probably be calling you after this. Things like, financing, those types of pieces that make that transaction a little bit more turnkey for a buyer. Better classified listings, right? So classified is kind of a core product that we offer right now as part of our marketplace. So how do we tell that story a little bit better? How do we provide the salient details and connect them over to a seller more quickly and providing that qualified lead over to the seller? Smarter partnerships. So we have a pretty cool partnership coming up with an organization called Tread Lightly. Tread Lightly is a fantastic partner, and they do some amazing work across the country in terms of restoring trails and working with local governments and organizations to make off-roading accessible and safe and fun and preserve those trails for a lot of future users too. So smarter partnerships and kind of helping tell the story and bring people together with organizations like that. And then most excitingly, I think, is we're about to launch an auction product, right? So that will dovetail into how we're working with Tread Lightly. But then in Q1, we'll be launching our auction product, which we're really excited about. And we think we'll, again, provide a lot of value to that marketplace, both buyers and sellers.
That's awesome. Excellent. Well, thank you all for joining us today on the Classic 4x4 podcast. This episode, I know, means not only a lot to me, but a lot to our listeners. This was the number one requested topic from almost all of our listeners out there, as they wanted a market overview and a market review of what's gone on and what's the future holds. So thank you all for your time and your participation. Juan, Max, I'd love to hear what's going on at Classic.com, and you guys are doing some absolutely amazing things. Keep up the great work, and I absolutely enjoy spending an hour or two a day literally on classic.com. As I look at cars in front of my multiple screens, I toggle back over to say, hey, is this a good deal? Where should I be buying this thing at? Both both Brian and Garrett. You guys are doing some amazing things at 4B Exchange, and I'm super excited to hear that you guys are launching an auction product. And I'm even more excited to throw one of my cars on or one of my trucks on that auction when it launches.
Awesome.
So yeah. Thank you guys again for your time. And back out to our listeners. If you have not checked out Classic.com, check them out online at Classic.com. Follow them on all their social channels at ClassicDOT.com. And also, if you haven't checked out 4B Exchange, make sure you check them out online at 4BExchange.com and follow them also on all their social channels at 4B Exchange. So thanks a lot, guys.